Too Much Scrolling for the 4th of July, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Powder Wig Wearing Chip Hessenfly.
And I'm Pam Vidor.
From Canada.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, Steve.
That we're separate from Canada and Canada is above us always.
When the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the potential bonds. Which have connected them to another. Steve, it is Independence Day. You know what I'm saying.
Congratulations. Good job, America. Way to be independent. Way to not bow down to a foreign power and to have all of the debt that we have sent to China.
Well, that's current.
We
paid off the debt. Who paid off the debt? You remember? A little history for you?
No, Ship, I don't. Do you tell me.
Andrew Jackson paid off the debt.
Good job, Mr. Jackson. I am for real. No, sorry. So, we're here to discuss The Sign of Four, the second Sherlock Holmes novel from Arthur Conan Doyle. This, I tell you, this is my favorite story that we've read so far. I like this better than The Hound of the Baskervilles, Pam.
Steve, you don't say.
I do say.
Why?
The character... The character development in this story is almost perfect. We get to understand Sherlock Holmes the least of our main characters, but John Watson is highlighted as the character that we are following in this story. And Doyle is really giving us this humanity of this man in this story.
Doyle is, or is Watson giving us the humanity of himself? Come on, Steve. this is my favorite.
This is
my favorite.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Pam, is this not your favorite story? Do you like Baskervilles better?
Probably. I mean, I love the gothic element, right? Okay. I mean, but I do like this story a lot. I definitely do.
This is like total action movie. Come on, let's have fun.
Right. This has both of those elements, both the romance and the action adventure, tied together so well. It has something for everyone. Sorry, Pam.
And it has Toby, the dog, who's so cute. It has like great, even the secondary characters are really good, right? Like Toby's owner is hilarious. And, you know, even the Smiths, like Mrs. Smith and Mordecai. Yeah, it's true. All of the characters are really well developed. Athelney Jones, I think this might be the only time Athelney shows up in the canon. I'm not positive about that, but he's a fun detective too.
Mm-hmm.
I did like when Sherlock forced Athelney Jones to the dinner party, which ended up being awesome.
what I've learned about conversations and actually how to have them to make sure everyone is having a good time.
Just go shallow on every subject. Think of every subject you think of and give a little bit of information on every subject. That's a great dinner party.
How about those two brothers? They're pretty fun.
Oh, Friend Thaddeus?
Friend Thaddeus.
Friend Thaddeus is a great character.
What was the brother's name?
Oh, well, I was going to get to that. Friend Thaddeus has a great way of speaking, and his high-pitched voice was something that absolutely took my imagination. And yes, he has a lot to say about Brother Bartholomew! The idea of this odd little character with a ring of hair and a bald head that stood out like a mountain, his high-pitched voice and his interesting thinking. This is great character development from Doyle.
And we get Watson in love. And we find out quite a bit about Watson, like more than we're ever going to find out in any of the 58 stories that follow this. The idea that he has known women on three continents, that he's had adventures like you wouldn't even believe. He sets himself up as more like an action adventure hero here than he will ever do again. He will be sort of secondary to Sherlock for the rest of the canon, but this is where we do see Watson himself.
So Watson documents, you know, all these things about himself, you know, while he's falling in love.
Exactly. Well, because Mary has changed him drastically, right?
And so, Mary is such a great character. She is such a strong woman who does not go down the normal tropes of a female character in a Victorian piece.
Well, and I feel like, may I go back to the last chapter? Because yesterday there was a little passage that I meant to talk about, and I think our episode kind of got away from us yesterday, and we kind of skipped this part. But when Watson at the end of The Strange Story of Jonathan Small tells Holmes, "Miss Morstan has done me the honor to accept me as a husband in prospective." He gave a most dismal groan. "I feared as much," said he. "I really cannot congratulate you." I was a little hurt. "Have you any reason to be dissatisfied with my choice?" I asked. "Not at all. I think she is one of the most charming young ladies I ever met and might have been most useful in such work as we have been doing. She had a decided genius that way. Witness the way in which she preserved that Agra plan from all the other papers of her father. But love is an emotional thing, and whatever is emotional is opposed to that true cold reason, which I place above all things. I should never marry myself, lest I bias my judgment." And then Watson laughs. "I trust," said I, laughing, "that my judgment may survive the ordeal." And so I love that passage of these two men who've been living together for a while. They're coming to the end of their time as roommates, not to realize that they will soon be reunited, but they're coming to the end of their time of roommates. And this is sort of Holmes saying, "Yep, you found a pretty awesome woman and I'm going to miss you, buddy." Right? It's kind of a sweet moment. And he's like, "Mary's awesome.
And where's that cocaine again?"
And then Doyle ruins it with the last line.
He ruins it, and yet it's like Sherlock is a depressive, right? Mm-hmm. And he's about to lose his best friend mm-hmm. to marriage. It's a very human emotion. Mm-hmm.
So if it was Batman 66, the third season comes around, Mary's an active part of the crime duo.
Yeah.
It's a trio at that point. Yep.
Batgirl. That's how that worked. Yep.
We need ratings. Bring her in. Mary's in now.
Yep. And the current adaptations, Mary is not only a strong character, but she has a strong background and becomes a much stronger character in the current adaptation.
So you're talking about the television programs? And mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, I mean, you have a group of characters. You certainly could build whatever world you wanted to around. You've got the housekeeper. You've got Mary. You've got Watson and Sherlock Holmes. You have at least three police officers that are you know, in the area. So, I mean, there's all sorts of fun stuff.
There's so many possibilities. And Mrs. Hudson is not a housekeeper. She's the landlady, but they keep treating her as the housekeeper.
She's the Aunt Harriet, Steve. Yeah,
she's definitely the Aunt Harriet if we're at Batman 66, for sure. This brings us to the themes. The romance story theme was laid out from beginning to end by Doyle here. He starts this saying, this is not going to be one of those silly romance stories, and then promptly gives us one of the great romance stories of the Victorian age, right?
Watson does a lot of push-ups before this story, so he's ready.
I don't know what that means.
Well, he's getting all buff and ready for Mary.
Okay. I don't think so. Maybe.
Not quite as Victorian as we want it to be. Okay.
Well, it's very important to be very buff before you enter a romance story. I don't know if that seems...
You're not helping me.
I've seen the covers of these stories. Everybody's super tanned and oiled up and very...
The Victorian romance is maybe not quite what you think. And, you know, don't forget that the very first time that we see Mary, she's petite, blonde, and well-gloved. So she's the kind of girl that you can fall in love with. So we presume that when Watson has known these women across three continents, they were not women that you would take home to your mother and marry. And so, but Mary Morstan, she is a proper, decorous Victorian woman, but with a difference. She's smarter. She keeps the right papers. She has that detective flair to her. she's the kind of woman that you can take home to Sherlock Holmes, and he says, "I'm gonna miss you, buddy, but yeah, you've gotta marry her."
That's pretty amazing that Doyle was able to find a character like Mary who Sherlock Holmes would approve of. She is doing those logical things. Even though romance is illogical, it is of the heart, is not something that Sherlock would approve of. He's okay with her.
Reluctantly approves.
Mm-hmm. And Watson self-identifies as a lazy person.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a good... a good match.
Too bad she doesn't stick around much longer.
Steve plots, have got to move along. We got to get her out of here.
Some of the other themes, Jonathan Small certainly is obsessed and goes through a lifetime trying to preserve this treasure.
Well, and I kind of wonder, so we have the recurrence of the theme of vengeance, right? Which mm-hmm. we all saw with Jefferson Hope, who's studying Scarlet. But here, I mean, Jefferson Hope's vengeance we could understand because it affected the woman that he loved. Here, I mean, this obsession with the treasure, I almost wonder, and I mean, I'm not willing to make the argument, but I would ask people to wonder. So at this time of imperialism, with the British Empire taking treasure from India and other places, I mean, is Doyle making a critique of British imperialism here? You know, this idea that you take treasure that never belonged to you, you come home and you cannot profit from it. No one can. It ends up in the bottom of the Thames. And so, you know, Captain Sholto stole it from Jonathan Small, who stole it from the merchant, who stole it from someone else. So, I mean, either way, none of this is earned wealth. Oh. And it seems that at the end of the novel, we have this idea like, you can't profit from other people's treasures, and you shouldn't. The best treasure is love.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
This is a romance story. Right. It's got great action adventure in it, though.
I'm going to follow up just a tad on that. I'm not sure if... I think that the downfall of all these characters was not recognizing, well, especially Jonathan Small, that his freedom was the treasure. Spending all your effort trying to have a box of goods that you can't unload, that you have to obsess about around all the time, and it not only it consumes him. You know, you've got to go get it. You've been wronged, as opposed to recognizing that he ran away early in life. He had an unfortunate accident where his leg was cut off. He was given an opportunity. He did something negative. He went to jail and got out of jail. Hey, listen, you can do what you want to. I mean, granted his injury, but instead he spent his time being consumed by trying to get his part of the treasure.
Mm-hmm.
What a waste of time.
And his ultimate downfall. His ultimate downfall is teaming up with Tonga, who we have almost no character development on, unfortunately. This weird little native that we kind of get a little bit of description from third parties that he's odd looking, and we get almost no character development on him, unfortunately. And that's his ultimate downfall, is this little guy kills Brother Bartholomew before he even gets a chance to talk to him and discuss the matter. And that leads this whole mystery. So that brings us to our question for this book, which we pose to our listening audience. The question is, what would you do today in 2020 with $1 million inheritance? If $1 million came to you right now, how would you, you know, obsess over it? How would you find vengeance with it? What would you do with your $1 million inheritance? And our listeners responded pretty loudly, and the majority of people said that they would find a way to give that money to others, to not spend it on themselves, but to spread that wealth around. That's pretty common.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Cousin Juliet says she would buy a modest home for herself and on a large bit of land with solar power, and then she would donate the rest to local charities and social projects to help people around her area.
Okay.
There's one great idea. Executive producer Amanda said she would pay off and make repairs to her house, set aside money for a college for her kids, and make plans for big family annual vacations until the kids are done with school. And a quarter of it would be for giving away. A quarter of it would immediately go to charity.
That's more than tithing, Steve.
Is it? What's tithing? 20%?
10%.
10%. Sorry. I'm a bad Catholic.
No, you're a good one. You're given 20% instead of 10. I remember maybe a couple of years ago when they were interviewing Nobel Prize laureates, I think it was in 2018, and they interviewed one of the chemistry winners and said, what are you going to do with your award money? And, you know, it came to about $1 million. And he said, oh, well, about 50% of it will go to taxes. And my daughter wants to go to like a really great school. So that'll be $250,000, $300,000. So really, I mean, that's most of it. And then I remember that he was like a middle-aged chemistry guy. And then the economics prof was like an older, more established person. She was like, oh, well, you know, I'm starting this foundation. I have this, and this. I feel like your answer to that question is so dependent on where you are in life.
100%.
You know what I mean? So like for me, $1 million, I mean, that's what people always say you should have set aside for retirement. I'm nowhere near that. So I'm thinking like, yeah, if I want $1 million, that would be great. I could have that $1 million retirement fund. But it depends where you are in life.
Yep. Seven people in our little poll agreed that investing that money would be the best choice, to find a way to make more money with that money, to keep a nest egg for the future.
Okay. I don't know anybody who's ever died that says, you know, what made my life complete was a basket of stocks, bonds, and cash. But anyway, so go for it.
But preparing for the future, keeping an eye on today and keeping an eye on the future so that we don't squander all that money.
Well, I would say dig a little deeper and see if you can find what you really want out of those resources. Those are resources. When you look at savings is just delayed goals, things that you want to do in the future. And you value those things more than you do today. So it's a good way of kind of, if you can put your thoughts on something that you value, this is important to me. I think most people could reach a number of those things, and they probably could reach more than they think they can. And, you know, if they work with somebody who's really good, maybe they can reach something they don't think is possible.
The sad fact is 9 of our respondents said that they would pay off their current debts. A lot of us are living under debt right now.
Sounds like they're looking for freedom, my friend.
There were 8 people that gave very specific things that they would buy with their money. Sally said she would buy a Mustang. And I said, Sally, that's a little on the nose, isn't it? A Mustang? Sally, really?
I like that.
Interestingly, 7 people on our list said that they would move from their current house, that their current house is not what they're looking for, and they would move maybe out of state. A lot of those are from Illinois, Chip.
What's preventing them from doing it now? If that's their goal, they could figure out a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need $1 million to do that.
You just need a plan. You just need a plan and take action. It's hard sometimes to take action.
Well, it is. It's because it ends up changing what you see as your everyday norms. And that reminds you of the importance of sitting down and dreaming about your life and kind of putting what you value in the forefront of what you're doing. You don't need to work for someone else. You don't need to spend all your time doing for someone else. When you have goals, many times we forget that we're important and the things that we value are important and put our energy on those things. It makes your life full. It fills you up.
There you go. Our art department here at Too Much Scrolling, Cheryl said that she would open a bakery. That certainly goes under the, what could you do with your life? What are your goals? What opportunities can you make for yourself? Opening a small business is kind of a interesting concept.
You need carbs, Steve. You need carbs.
Everybody needs cars.
And not everybody can own an ice cream truck.
We didn't get any input from our ice cream truck this time.
Jennifer, come on, man.
I wonder what Jennifer would do with $1 million. Well, buy more ice cream trucks.
She bought an ice cream truck. That's the coolest thing ever.
Yes. It's wonderful. Sherry gave us a silly answer. She said, buy some fancy ketchup.
Really fancy.
Real fancy ketchup.
What about our younger listeners, Pam?
Well, my 11-year-old daughter, who is a member of her 6th grade stock club, said she would invest the money. This was not a surprise to me. But my 9-year-old is a bit more whimsical. She said she would spend it buying dogs.
She needs to spend some time at the fodder farm. There's a pride of cats running around. I'm sure that we could figure out a way to get a pack of dogs in there, too.
An occasional pack of dogs.
No regrets in spending $1 million purchasing dogs.
One's going to be named Toby.
Oh, no doubt. You could live in number 7.
Exactly.
So this is an interesting conversation. This is, again, back to dreaming. We should have goals, and we should probably maintain our dreams of what we could do, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of good research, actually, on getting away from your day-to-day life. This is a reason why when you don't take your vacation, you're really robbing yourself of that opportunity to get away, get into a different environment. And I didn't say go out and spend every dollar you have to go to Hawaii. If you want to do that, you certainly could. But just getting away, it gives you an opportunity to reevaluate your life, gives you an opportunity to think about the things that you value, put those things in order. And all of a sudden, when you come back and you're ready to get on with life, you're not overwhelmed with the minutiae that's just is crowding your brain, that's taking up your life. You're more focused on the things that you value. And I promise you, you'll have a much happier life focusing on things that fill you up than having you being weighed down by things that just don't matter to you.
So you're saying the Grand Canyon is just as nice as Hawaii?
Well, it could be. It could be, but maybe not to your mom.
Chip, I'm really glad you say that, because I do think, especially this summer with COVID-19, I think a lot of us have already canceled whatever vacation plans we had in advance and are maybe not thinking about the fact that we still need to take a break, whether it's a staycation or there's a place that we could go that's fairly safe. And so I think it's really important. And I'm just thinking, am I taking a break this summer? I hadn't really planned to, but probably should. I think you're right.
Speaking as somebody who just did a 18-day road trip, it is valuable. It is important to get away. Even it doesn't have to be 18 days. It can be just a day. Going up to Door County would be great.
Mm-hmm. Going camping for a day, go hiking through the woods for the day, heading off to a castle that you've never seen before, walking around it, walking mm-hmm. the beach. Could be anything. Could bike rides. The point is to break you out of your day-to-day situation so that you can have time to have your brain kind of process and sort of decompress all those things that are taking up your life that you think are so important until you get to some place and you recognize they're not important at all. And you can refocus on, once again, finding those things that you value. That's probably the most important thing that a person could learn in life, is you don't have to live someone else's life. You can live your life. And you can be comfortable with it. And as long as it's not harming another person, listen, you want to go hike the Appalachian Trail? Let's figure out a way for you to do that. It's your life. You only get a chance to do it once. Go out and have some fun and do the things that you value.
Nice. So what would Sherlock Holmes do? We need bracelets. WWSHD. What would Sherlock Holmes do in 2020, in this age of COVID-19 and all this staying at home in your chair and solving crimes? How would Sherlock Holmes fare?
Well, and I kind of wanted to ask you guys, I came up with a few ideas. Like, would he be a virologist working on COVID-19? Would he be an FBI profiler? Would he be more international, member of Interpol? Would he be a computer hacker? If so, on what side? Because don't forget, he's very good at processing information. Would he be a YouTube personality? He's written all those monographs. Would he go where a lot of our smartest folks go, to Wall Street, be a trader? Mm-hmm. or would he be some sort of drug addict of no fixed address? What do you guys think?
I said yesterday he'd be in Vegas, kicked out of most of the casinos for card counting, and just being too smart.
Considering how often Watson and Holmes talk about how he could have been a criminal,
yeah,
you think he would go towards a criminal lifestyle in 2020?
I don't think he's going to be a criminal. I think that he is. I don't think he'd be working for a government agency or working for a company. He's a small business guy. He's a one-man shop. He doesn't have a. He's not answering to anybody, and I don't know if his personality would allow him to work for someone or even be a good boss. I don't think he would build, people working underneath him. I mean, think about his office. His office is him and Watson, and that's about it. That's it. So he's still kind of a one-man show.
What do you think, Steve?
I don't know what Sherlock would be in 2020. He certainly is independent. He definitely, I think of some of my computer friends who sit at home and do computer work, really high level thinking, really logical, step-by-step thinking, but they can do it all from the comfort of their home. And I think maybe that's the way that I could see his mind working with the technology. We've talked about technology so often with Doyle in the Victorian era. The turn of the century brought with it so much technological change. I think maybe that might be, but then again, that might be my perspective coming from where I am toward this, where Chip is coming from the financial and saying that maybe he sees that being the future.
You know, we also have to recognize he's got incredible personal skills. He likes being around people. He communicates incredibly well. You know, entertainment could be where he would wind up on that because he's incredibly bright. He could be a public intellectual, able to articulate high-level concepts and charming.
So you think that he would direct the musical and be the computer teacher?
No, I think that he would be a public intellectual. Did you like that
Thank
part?
Thank you, Watson. I mean Chip.
That's right.
What do you think, Pam?
Well, so I guess I feel like he loves stories. And this is, again, each of us sees something in Holmes that we can connect to, right? But so he loves stories and he loves data. So, I mean, I definitely am a little bit with you, Steve, in thinking that he would probably work from home, but I think he would do like data science. He would be really involved in like processing big data. There's so much fascinating work being done right now in the digital humanities of processing giant corpora of stories. And so, you know how like in English classes, you learn the skills of close reading. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, hello, this is what we've been doing for the last 50, listen to me, for the last nearly 100 days, close reading, one chapter a day, looking at specific quotations, trying to go really, really deep. But then there's also far reading, the idea of taking tons and tons and tons of texts and using computer algorithms to see what they're up to. So I think that Holmes might be really interested in distant reading and combining the skills of close and distant reading in trying to think about like all the different stories, all of the different crime stories that can arise throughout the world.
I think that this points to Doyle's amazing character here because you're right. Our own perspective, we see ourselves in Sherlock Holmes and we think that our thing that we love is the thing that he's best at. I think that's great character development from Doyle.
No kidding.
Wow.
And the sign of four as the way that actually develops the narrator of this wonderful character.
Mm-hmm.
Been a great story, right? It's been a lot of fun.
This is a great story.
There's no gruesome parts to this. I mean, just a tiny bit of gruesome death to it. There's a little bit of racism that we can look at as a historical piece of this, and we can go, okay, that was what it was. There's the history of India here that we still don't know enough about, and we should study more. But this story's got everything.
Yeah, it really does. And it's been so much fun reading it with you guys. You know, coming at it, like, that was just great. Sherlock Holmes, he's a small businessman, he's a literary critic, he's a computer guy. I love it.
Interesting. wow, wow, we're doing good work here.
Doyle is doing good work for us. It's all
that's right. So we need to get to our next group of short stories. We're going to start discussing the casebook of Sherlock Holmes starting tomorrow.
Yay!
Back to the short stories, and then we'll get to one more novel, and then we are done with the canon after that. We got...
Hard to believe, right?
Unbelievable.
Oh, we only have, what is it? I'm going to guess 24 more days, and we have finished the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes.
Then schools can be open again, and I can go back to school, right?
Oh, that's right. Well, now you're going to go back to school with all this new knowledge you'll be able to share, Steve.
Uh-huh. I absolutely.
Steve will be directing Sherlock Holmes, the musical.
I hope that we have a musical this year, Pam. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how to do that. We'll see. We'll find out.
Lots of solos.
Zoom. A whole Zoom musical. Oh, boy. We'll find out. We'll go forward. We are going to get to the casebook of Sherlock Holmes, the last group of short stories, followed by the last book, The Valley of Fear. And then we will be done. We've gone through the entire canon. Our quest will be complete. I hope everybody out there is enjoying this, staying with us, reading with us, enjoying these conversations as much as we are. I hope. But you know what? This is kind of selfish. It's just for me. Whether you like it or not, it's fine. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm powdered wig wearing Chip Hessen.
And I'm Canadian, happily living in beautiful, independent America, Pamela Bedard.
Happy Independence Day. Let the follow you!
What do you think, Steve?
Very little.